Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's E-V-A-L-Y-N-N-E, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hello, listeners. I'm Evelyn Charmer. You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to Autistic Voices. This week's guest is an autistic man. His name's Paul Wadey. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Evelyn.
And Paul is, amongst other things, a performing artist, which I'll let him tell you more about in a little while. But before we do that, I always start my show with a bit of gratitude. I think it's a healthy way to start the show. I'm certainly grateful for a calm and peaceful environment in order to interview you in. There's been some works going on at a house up the road and lots of noise all day. It's been really, you know, it's essential. People have to have work done on the houses. I get that. I'm not complaining, but it has been really disruptive to the work I do, which is mainly doing online therapy via Zoom and things like that and recording radio shows. So I'm really glad it's all died down and we can listen to everything you've got to say, Paul. So what about yourself? What are you grateful for today?
I am grateful to be married and living where I am and working in my job and having my health, which I really need to improve. Had COVID in February, so I'm still pulling it together, I think, compared to what I was before. I'm very grateful for the Holy Dharma. I'm very grateful for being alive. Yeah. Everything.
That's brilliant.
I'm
yeah.
Very grateful for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too. And hello to your wife if she's listening. Okay, so I've already mentioned that you are an autistic man. So tell us a bit about that. When were you diagnosed autistic?
Diagnosed in December 2004 at the age of 41. Okay. My sister-in-law insisted I had this condition. We have wonderful arguments and shouted it at me as she does. And I laughed in her face. But she was proved right, and she worked very hard to get me the diagnosis for weeks on end, phoning around places until we got diagnosis in Cambridge. It took 4 hours. My father and my brother were involved. My father was accidentally diagnosed. At the end of it, my brother is the neurotypical of the family. And after that, I joined okay. social groups in December 2004, and met all sorts of wonderful people that are still with me to this day.
Okay. So around that time or a little bit later on, you spoke to The Guardian about your experiences.
What happened was I went on a job experience with them, courtesy of the Prospects Job Agency, the National Autistic Society used to have, and spent about a month in their offices. And then they got to know me and said, well, you write an experience about how you got diagnosed autistic. And I talked about the whole experience being arrested and acquitted of common assault, and how we managed to get the courts to pay £1,200 for the diagnosis. And my friend, best friend from school, actually, when I was 10, we were both the same age, and we were both, of course, acquitted. Having been lied about, it's all there in the article. I was diagnosed autistic at the age of 41 by Paul Wadey. It's a really snappy title. And they said,
oh,
oh Paul, please write this thing for us. And I said, certainly, that's a strange voice you've got, but I'd be very glad to do
it. Thank you very much. We are The Guardian. Doesn't matter what we sound like. We are The Guardian.
Okay. So I wrote them, and they were very nice. And they took they sent a photographer around. And he used the photograph that was the worst one of all. I'm standing on my doorstep posing as I do with this. My face and features, as you can see clearly on the Zoom, beautiful, isn't it? even to this day. And when the magazine came out, they used the one image where he bent down and got me kind of up. You see, I got the toothy. I'm doing it now. The teeth were showing. There's a sight of me up my nose to make me look a little, that sort of person. God's sake.
And did it help?
So not that I'm vain or anything, you know?
We're not going to go full into the incident with the common assault arrest and your acquittal and all that went with that. But obviously, as you said, people can read it if they want to. When was it in The Guardian?
So it was in February 2005.
Okay, so people can see that online if they need to. So did it help in any way having said, got your piece out in the media?
Well, I had a horrible time in a polytechnic being lied about, where the thing was so bad. It took me 4 years to get a 3-year degree and ended up doing a postgraduate there as well. Okay. Some very strange things happened to me in this polytechnic. I ended up standing to be vice president of the computing site in the fifth year, and I found my old Buddhist movement. But how it started in the first 2 years, I really don't think you want to know about that. It's in my book that I published, Guerrilla Autistics, A Neurotypical Society and Treasure Manual. But having an article in The Guardian really helped my peace of mind that all these ex-students didn't think I was deranged and insane. Courtesy of student political societies lying about me. So, yeah, it's really been good to have an article out there. Just talking
about especially something like The Guardian, which, you know. Yeah. You just mentioned you had a book, Guerrilla Autistics?
Used to be called Guerrilla Aspies. We changed the title due to peer pressure. Autistic peer pressure. That's a total paradox.
Okay. So it's called Guerrilla, as in G-U-E-R-R-I-L.
That's right. That is always a tricky thing.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about your book.
It teaches you how to bully, seduce, manipulate, and coerce when you're autistic. I felt there was a gap in the market for a kind of rock and roll account of being autistic. How to listen to people despite always having more interesting things to say, how to put up with people who are not you, which is an absolute torture for the autistic. Let's face it, we're focused around ourselves and your point is. And there's one section, for example, and I explain how when autistics and neurotypicals get drunk, they swap places.
Things
yeah, it's the truth, I tell you.
That's really interesting.
Years of experience.
And how did you come to that conclusion? That through...
By getting drunk with neurotypicals.
And observing what happened.
Indeed.
Oh, okay.
Years later in my realizing a true insight, you see, a decade of reflection, profound.
Yeah. And so is your book still on sale? Can people
buy it? It is. I've now reprinted it for the fourth time. So I've got another 100 to sell. That's 800 hard copies altogether, sold 700. And also there's about £500 worth of sales on Kindle. So I've done quite well with it. And also got T-shirts, badges, and even the odd fridge magnet, which I managed to sell. Fridge magnets didn't sell very well.
Yeah, I don't know if fridge magnets are going slightly out of fashion. But the T-shirts are fantastic. I can see you wearing one now. And listeners, obviously you can't see this, but he's got a T-shirt and it says neurotypicals are weird on it. Yeah. Well, I was going to talk about your T-shirts later, but you've brought them up, so let's talk about them now. Let's tell people about...
Well, what happened was I started playing the Edinburgh Festival in 2015 because I got this huge skill set in performing from my darker days of complete sobriety and wanting to be an actor. I went to East 15 Drama School when I was 23. Lasted a year. I was lucky to do that because I was such an undiagnosed ADHD autistic. Absolutely. No, I just used to do an hour to 2 hours walking a day. You know how it is. Guys, young men, pubs, clubs. Well, I fell into martial arts and ended up doing lots of gradings. And I mean, I hated sports in school, but inadvertently found the true way forward. So theatre was the one thing I put energy in, get loads out of. And I was able to run around, boom, 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 boom. So I was doing this show on the Edinburgh Fringe, which I still do, actually, which converted the audience to being autistic. And I needed a T-shirt. So I got one printed that said Aspie with the Avengers A at the beginning, which I still got. For copyright reasons, I couldn't continue. But then I started coming up with more T-shirts and then badges with these wonderful messages like, cure neurotypicals now. And too busy obsessing to relate to you. And then I found the American Horror Story font, the Roanoke, that said, normal people scare me. And I thought, oh, right. So I came up with neurotypical people scare me. And then I changed it to I scare neurotypical people. And people get the reference. It's a favorite T-shirt being me.
Yeah, and it's not a subtle. The T-shirt you're wearing has got a great big yellow stripe across it with the wording really huge. So do you get stopped? Do people stop and talk to you about
that? That actually happened. I was walking from Kentish Town to Camden a few months ago, and there was a banging next to my ear, and I looked to my left. There's a woman on the bottom deck of a bus at the back, banging on the window, giving me a double thumbs up. She loved it. And then there was another three people commented by the time I got to Camden. One said, yes, they are. And the other two said, I like your T-shirt. The fourth one being a nice young woman from Austria. I was on the Edinburgh Festival this year, well, 2 weeks. And instead of getting two or three people comment on the T-shirt per festival, it should be a 2 or 3 week period, there's two or three a day.
Wow. There's
so many of us coming out now, neurodivergent, people reacting. One guy hugged me. Mom, told me about his 12-year-old daughter writing a book, told me he'd been in the Priory. And it's just wonderful.
Yeah, all I think that's brilliant. And also, you're smashing the whole, you know, I'm a great one for myth busting. And the whole thing of, you know, some people still have the belief that neurodivergent people can't have a sense of humor or get sarcasm or nuance and things like that. And it's a very outdated, outmoded viewpoint, which you're just smashing the lid off, aren't you, really?
But it's a social skill, nuance and subtlety and all this daft and emotional business neurotypicals love. It isn't binary and straightforward and all this nonsense you have to... I mean, I grew up in a family with undiagnosed father, and my mother's half-daughter is hilariously ADHD and has done brilliantly in her life, really achieved a great deal and is very happy. And she's obviously a speeder like myself, you see. So I'm part of bloodlines of people who adapted very well to the neurotypical world and got on very well in it. And the secret seems to be this sort of following certain rules of subtlety and sensitivity.
Mm.
So, yeah, I can do nuance, but I don't particularly like it. I was having this conversation with my brother only the other day. I said that I can do nuance, but I don't particularly like it. Rather be straightforward. Besides which, he is this neurotypical poor thing, is relatively ruled by these subtleties and sees small points as the big deal. I, on the other hand, want to get everything straightforward. I'm always focusing on the specific points. So if we have these two very contrary, subtle, basic natures, it's great for arguing, and you can really instead of agreeing as two men from Liverpool.
Yes, because that's where you're from, Liverpool, obviously. Okay, so tell us about what show you were doing this year for the Edinburgh Fringe.
Well, that one was an adapted version of the original show, the Guerrilla Autistics. This one was autobiographical. I came up with 2 hours worth of material, and I do about 20 minutes of it, and then I stopped the show. I'd given everyone menus, and they were allowed to select the rest of the show because I like to improvise with the audience.
Yeah, nice. So how does that actually happen? So how do they choose the menus? Have they got an electronic device?
Yeah, we've got these laminated double-sided A4 pages.
Oh, so they vote?
With loads of PowerPoint. You can print off a PowerPoint presentation as a series of images, as the slides, you see. So they just tell me which one. I'd like a number 17, please. An excellent choice, madam. You know,
that
particular one. There was a lot of messing about with the laptop, which is a bit annoying because you've only got 45 minutes to perform in. But it kind of summarizes my life, really, that it's always been like that. The only problem is I'm nearly 60 now. So I don't have the ability I used to have, is the ADHD. I didn't know I had ADHD. No medication was involved. So the more energy I get, happier I am, more energy. So I used to be very good. at thinking quickly. In fact, the faster I think, the clearer I get. This is my habit. But once I turned 50, I became a relatively normal autistic. You get overwhelmed, you need to rest, and oh dear. And I was all right until bloody COVID hit me. I was on the fifth of the Neurospace Collective performance nights in the Barons Court Theatre, which is a collection of pieces that we'd all put together. And I woke up that morning, and I felt weird. I'd felt weird the night before, but I performed, you see. I'd gone in and performed, feeling very strange. And then on the fifth day, I tested, and the bar of doom appeared on the tracer.
COVID.
The COVID, yeah. So I was trying to Skype in. I was on the phone saying, let me Skype in with the video projector. And they couldn't handle it because I'd perform at the beginning and then I'd do all the sound and light afterwards.
Okay.
Work from that booth with a microphone. The woman used to do a piece at the end and I was a disembodied voice because I love all the technology. And I've always been into all that, so I can do that.
So what's the show called, Paul?
Well, that was the Neurospace Collective show, but the one, it was a potpourri of different pieces.
Okay.
Written monologues and scenes between two or more people, three people. I came on and off from the lighting booth as somebody's dead dad twice and then walked back and did the lighting.
Oh, okay. So montage. Oh,
asking for it, yeah.
So the Neurospace Theatre Collective is what you're talking about. And I found them on Twitter. Yeah. I was having a bit of a poke around earlier when I was doing my research, having spoke to you previously. So the Neurospace Theatre Collective, can you tell our listeners all about that?
Well, it started in 2017 when I was on the Autism Arts Festival in Kent Uni and met two women there and already had my old friend Alan. So that was four of us. And then we got together with Janine Booth, a Marxist feminist, mum of grown kids and trade unionist and poet, brilliant poet. And we formed the group there, and we had some other people come and go join us who were brilliant, and we performed the Edinburgh Festival three times, did different venues. We got a big grant from the Arts Council in 2019 and did a very small tour, by which time everyone but me was burned out.
Yeah.
And I was driving them mad because I don't have their problems. I'm a very insensitive ableist style person, but I'm not an ableist. I'm a bit of a schizophrenic. I'm a bit of a dual personality in that way. I'm very deeply adapted to being brutal neurotypical, whereas I actually always love the most vulnerable people. Mm. Always. You know, leads to my Buddhist faith. Neurospace came out of that. That finished in 2019. Then in 20 and 21, we had the wonderful experience for me, this great big lockdown, which was a great personal reset for me anyway, very spiritual experience, because I'm used to doing long two-week Buddhist retreats from years ago. So for me, it was a great big retreat, and it really it changed me, actually. And then we got together, the collective, and did the whole thing. Ended 2020, I got all these people together. About 30 people were interested, of which we got a half dozen people to actually perform.
Okay.
And we got on with it in the Barons Court Theatre.
So Neurospace Theatre Collective. So we're, apart from the Edinburgh Fringe,
yeah.
What we're going to do is pause for some music and the ads, and then when we come back, if you can tell us a bit more about where people might see a show or get in touch.
You don't understand what his work problems are, or why he's working so hard.
Well, you know, it's his job, really.
Mm-hmm. And he's always been happy with it in the past.
Yeah.
It's the first time he's been under quite so much pressure.
Well.
Mm-hmm. And how long has he been a bus driver?
He's not a bus driver.
Take the National Express when your life's in a mess. It'll make you smile. All human life is here, from the feeble old dear to the screaming child. From the student who knows that to have one of those would be a suicide. To the family
She'll provide you with drinks and theatrical winks for a sky-high fee. Mini skirts were in style when she danced down the aisle back in 63. But it's hard to get by when your arse is the size of a small country.
That makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer. Part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, listeners, to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm speaking with Paul Wadey of the Neurospace Theatre Collective, previously known as Stealth Aspies. And I don't know which name I prefer. I think they're both wonderful. So welcome back, Paul.
Thank you very much. Hans Asperger, you see, people got sick and tired of his Nazi past. Was he involved in the Action 24 sub-Holocaust, where they wiped out between 290 and a quarter of a million men, women, and mainly children who were severely mentally and physically disabled. And in the end, it was decided by the majority that we shouldn't go near Hans Asperger's because it all got rather censorious, you see, the subculture.
You might have lost a few of our listeners there because you've certainly lost me. So Who's Hans Asperger?
Hans Asperger was a German scientist who first defined my kind. He gave his name to the term Asperger's syndrome.
Oh. Do you know, I didn't even know that, and I have Asperger's.
Where it all came from. Yeah, Dr. Hans, you've got to look him up.
Well, now.
I've got to remember him. Dr. Lorna Wing, who first translated his work and then introduced the concept of the National Health Service in 1993.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. That's very educational.
He started realizing people like myself exist and have a condition that explodes our personalities.
Yeah. So before the break, we were talking about Neurospace Theatre Collective, who used to be called the Stealth Aspies Collective, and you changed the name.
The idea is that there's a whole race of autistics out there that don't look, sound, act like they're autistic, but they are.
Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier about once you got over the age of about 50, you started to become a bit more of what you termed a normal autistic. And what
relatively hardcore. It's the vulnerability. We're all defined by these vulnerabilities that you know about, but I wanted to talk about the people who aren't really defined.
Yeah,
I don't even know they're autistic, but they're out.
Well, tell us about that then, because I mean,
giving us monologues. We put out a questionnaire in 2017 about what your life was like being in the closet when you didn't know you're autistic, or you're still in the closet, you're hiding, and we got autistic doctors, transgendered people. Men, women, we got everybody, parents coming in, giving us monologue pieces to read about what it was like being in the closet or you're masking or what it was like coping when you don't really look, sound and act like you're mentally disabled. Because I think it's all relative to individuals. Disorder and disability are properties of individuals. They're not absolutes, you see. Yeah. So instead of saying, oh, autism, you're mentally disabled, you should say, well, as a neurodivergent person, you have a particular profile of ability and disability unique to you that varies over time.
Yeah.
That's why I never saw being autistic as a disorder and disability as an absolute term. There's people out there be throwing things at the computer what I'm saying, because being autistic, you can only have that particular definition of things. Don't ever get any help and support and understanding in the world. You don't know what it's like in my head. And I reply, yes, I can only see what it's like outside your head, where you're doing rather well, some of you, and doing awfully others. It's all individuals.
Yeah, no, absolutely all individuals. And how people relate to it and how people choose to describe it for themselves it differs greatly as well. Mm. Some people really balk at the idea of having a disability. Some people say, no, I absolutely have a disability and I'm not going to be, you know, pretending I don't or being ashamed of that, because that's, you know, why should I be? So there's everything in between. Okay, but why did you start Stealth Aspies in the first place, which is now your Neurospace Theatre Collective?
The idea was to tell the truth, was to get closer to my own experience and that of the people around me.
Brilliant.
Because there was always representations that were entirely about being disordered and disabled, and it was all very binary and depressing. And it was like, well, no, it's not. I wanted something more nuanced. Aha.
Yeah, well, there you go, you see. Yeah. And do they perform all year round, or is it all
geared towards
Edinburgh?
The first group couldn't get any further than sitting on a stage in a row and standing up and doing a monologue and sitting down again. But the next group could do plays and shows. So we did that in February. I got torpedoed by COVID. And then we haven't done anything else since, because people have been on different projects. And then I put all my effort and energy into A, recovering, B, doing my show in Edinburgh. And now it's September. We could reboot the whole thing and do other things. Yes.
Yes. So
what I just need is a load of London-based autistics and the old crew to come together and see if we can get a venue together. But I hate organisation and I hate publicity. We need to get another grant off the Arts Council and then get an administrator and a publicist and then get a format together we can take around places. So that is the current state of play. I do wish I wasn't approaching 60. Drives me up the wall.
Yeah, it's hard to accept, isn't it? I know, I'm the same. And the same as you as well. Well, I didn't know that I was Aspie or autistic until I was 53.
Neurodivergent.
The word doesn't matter. I didn't know I was me until I was 53. And I'm like, why haven't I noticed before this level of overwhelm and burnout and all those things? And I think, oh, probably just thought it was something else, or that I was a failure.
A brave woman who copes with life and gets on with it every day. That's why.
Yeah, like the rest of us.
For herself, copes, is brave, can even get a radio show together, and good for you.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, same as you, I just wanted to get different voices out there and different people's experiences of what life's like for them, and who happen to be neurodivergent. And so far, it's been a real eye-opener, and I've met so many wonderful people doing amazing things and talking about their lives and their paths to discovery that they are neurodivergent and those kinds of things. And now I know you with your amazing T-shirts. I shall be purchasing one, I'm sure.
All got to be positive, though. I spent all my 30s in the same Buddhist movement.
Okay. Tell us a bit about that.
Retreat. Wonderful. I was in this horrible poly doing a postgraduate.
Yeah.
Lots of respect and support and friends and fun by that point. And I found a Buddhist movement, which I've been into Buddhism since 1986, practicing on my own as a Zen Buddhist, trying the old group. But then I found a movement I really liked and stuck with it. Which is a cult, really, which is why I've got a song called Join a Cult, which you can hear on the link that will be provided.
Yes.
And I would like to put it, I'm trying to write a show at the moment for Neurospace Collective, which doesn't mention neurodiversity at all. It's called The Cult, and it's a study of a faith-based self-developmental religious group. And they're all there. The Scientologists are there. Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh is there, all the cliches, love bombing and breaking techniques, they're all going to be there. And it's going to be a ceremony you can attend. And all these characters will be appearing. And there may even be somebody in the audience trying to warn everybody about it.
There might be. Who knows?
I'm talking. Right, I need a laugh.
So you joined a Buddhist movement.
I joined a Buddhist movement. Mm-hmm. I spent all my 30s in it. I used to go to either the North London Buddhist Centre or the London Buddhist Centre at Bethnal Green. Mainly, I was based in the North London Buddhist Centre, and I committed to that. And I used to go to these retreat centres in the country and go on Buddhafield, the Buddhist retreats, and camping. And, oh, it was wonderful. And I met my first autistic girlfriend there when I was 30 and she was 35. When I first joined, and neither of us knew we were autistic. Neither of us knew. She went back to America after about 4 months at a wonderful experience. And I met my first bipolar girlfriend in that movement as well.
Okay.
It's basically the same as our relationship with a dangerous Bond girl. It was just marvelous. Very good friend for many years after we split up. Well, I got out alive anyway. It was great. Yeah.
Just give me a sec because I can hear lots of shouting. I'm just going to pause.
I see.
Froggy dresses! Froggy dresses! Thank you, judges.
Naughty boys in nasty schools, headmasters breaking all the rules, having fun and playing fools, smashing up the woodwork tools. All the teachers in the pub, passing round a ready rub, trying not to think of when the lunchtime bell will ring again. Oh, what fun we had, but did it really turn out bad? All I learned at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had, but at the time it seems I'm bad, trying different ways to make the difference through. The headmaster's had enough today, all the kids have gone away, gone to fight with next door school, every term that is the rule. Sits alone and vents his pain, same old back sides again, all the small ones tell two tales, walking home and squashing snails. Oh, what fun we had, but did it really turn out bad? All I learned at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had, but at that time it seems so bad, trying different ways to make sure we go through the days. Lots of girls and lots of boys, lots of smells and lots of noise, playing football in the park, kicking push bikes after dark, baggy trousers, dirty shirt, pulling hair and eating dirt, teacher comes through breaking up, back of the end with a plastic cup. Oh, what fun we had, but did it really turn out bad? All I learned at school was how to bend, not break the rule. Oh, what fun we had, but at that time it seemed so bad, trying different ways to make the difference through the days.
Baggy trousers, baggy trousers,
The station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Talking of cults, I live next door to army cadets. Wow. And they're just arriving and they're being quite loud, so don't worry about that. I wondered what was going on. Okay, so back to the interview then. Let's just pause for another song and some adverts and we'll come straight back to you, Paul.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back. This is Autistic Voices, and I'm speaking this week to Paul Wadey of Neurospace Theatre Collective, previously known as Stealth Aspies Theatre Company. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you.
So I find your life fascinating. So you've had all sorts of things happen and lots of experiences that you've been sharing bits about. Obviously, we can only go into so much detail, but I'd love to know more. And if anybody listening would like to know more or find out more about what you do, where might they find you?
There's the app Paul Wadey on Twitter, and then there's Gorilla Autistics on Twitter, Neurospace Collective on Twitter, and then there's the Paul Wadey website, which you can marvel at the glory that is Paul Wadey. And there are ways to contact me on email.
What's the Paul Wadey website address?
Wadey.com.
.com. Okay. And it's W-A-D-Y, isn't it? No E. Yes.
There's no E. They always put a bloody E in it, you know.
So tell us about, so you're obviously really great and interested in performing arts, writing. You've talked about a book. You've written songs. You got the collective together. So, and you perform yourself at the Edinburgh Fringe. So has it always been in your blood?
Well, no, I didn't want anything to do with it in the beginning. I just wanted to be really, really boring and good at things I wasn't good at. I had private tuition in maths for 4 years when I was in school. I still wasn't any good at maths. I wanted to design electronic circuits. Couldn't even do basic transistor theory. I wanted to design silicon chips when I left school in 1980, and I couldn't. Drive me mad. And after killing myself trying to do A-levels when I was absolutely speeding my head up with anxiety as an autistic, I fell into the Everyman Youth Theatre in Liverpool in 1982 when I was 18, which was full of amazing characters from the hard end of Liverpool. I don't have an accent. I live in the area where there was a mild Scouse accent, you know, but the people I was with, they were dead crusty lad. They really had the accent. They're all characters, you know, from the Dock Road, from Liverpool 8, and they were brilliant. Some of them ended up film stars.
Wow.
It's true. And that was the real place. I always longed for really authentic, sincere people that I still love to this day. And that's how I got into it. And then I left the A-levels and joined a theatre group and toured 27 venues for 3 months. And the person who got me into that was 16 and ended up very, very, very famous and legendary. She went on to great things. And I'm one of those people who could talk about knowing all these really famous people, and he's still there trying to start.
Well, you know, you sound to me like you've achieved a lot, so you're not at the starting blocks at all. It's just your perception of it.
I know, darling, I know. But
you know what? Years ago, I used to work in performing arts. I worked in youth sort of theatre, and I took a group of young people from Hull over to Liverpool to meet, and I can't remember the name of the guy, but there was a really brilliant like youth theatre company called the Yellow House.
Yeah.
In Liverpool, because it was his house. His house was painted yellow on the outside, and he'd had no funding and they couldn't afford to, you know, rent anywhere. But all the local young people used to come to his house, and his wife would bring in sandwiches, things like that. And they just ended up becoming this mixed bag. All sorts of abilities, neurodivergent, neurotypical, disabled, able-bodied young people who did performance-based art, which was so powerful, I can't tell you. It was amazing. And it all came from them sitting around, eating his wife's sandwiches, chatting, getting into things, a bit of improv, and talking about their lives and their experiences. And they would create these performances that I got them to come over to Hull for a performance weekend that was happening, like an arts weekend. And they were literally given about half an hour to an hour beforehand with about three different ideas. Yeah. And they came up with a performance in that time. And it blew the lid off the place, you know. So I don't know if they're still going, but if you're out there, Yellow House, hello. I'll never forget you. You had a big impact on me.
Wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our house, it has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street.
Something tells you that you've got to move
in the middle of our.
Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
And I think there's a hell of a lot of talent comes out of Liverpool, you know, and maybe it is about sort of people coming together, just people coming together. And it sounds like that's where you started with the Stealth Aspies.
That's true. That's near, I suppose. And I did a lot of stuff in Liverpool and then went to Manchester for a year and then got to drama school. But then after that, I just worked because I knew something was funny about me. I couldn't tell what it was because I was just so good at recovering. But I was far from perfect. My God, It's like being on amphetamines, as I said, and you just couldn't relate to people. So I spent a long time working, then did a degree, and then found the Buddhist movement working and really pulled my life together.
Mm.
I never got into drinking drugs, thankfully.
Or electronics, thankfully.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sadly, or electronics. Yeah, I still got my gear in the shed, funnily enough, all the stuff I used to put together on breadboards. And, you know, my old Avo, got a digital amp vault over me to these days. And I've got synthesizers in the corner, even if I'm not really a musician. I can still put together tunes and compose and just play machines, even if I don't have the capacity to play any instrument. I'm a funny old thing. I've got a sensibility. I'm a composer, but not up there. And then I'm completely lost as to where I am because there's so much happened.
That's okay. Let me try and direct you back. So what's your take on, you know, well, I was going to ask you about success, but I know we've had a brief chat about that before, and it's a funny one, isn't it? Success and failure. But I was going to talk about, how do you feel about your shows in Edinburgh? How do they go down? Who comes to see them? You know, who do you appeal to?
The answer is you can get between 1 and 13 people on this particular one. I've had runs in the past where they were sitting on the floor in a 35-seat venue. It was so full of people. And I've had other times where you get one person. One occasion during the run, didn't get anyone. So I ran round to see the guy doing the show called I Am Autistic, whose name I can't remember. He's very good.
Okay.
Got quite a lot of problems.
So if you've got one member of the audience, would you still perform the whole show?
Yeah, I have.
Excellent. And what's that like?
You have a dialogue with one person, 3 people, 10 people. It's all about talking to people. You want to react off them, get to know them. And that's what it's all about. You could do an army of people or one person. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. So you're going to keep doing the show?
Yeah.
Do you change it every year? Do you adapt it? Does it grow?
Well, it evolves with me.
Yeah.
My perspective and understanding of it, because I'm always mixing with autistic people in person and online. But that's really what I put into the show. I even had a stalker last year on Facebook and then making films about me. I had 2 of these people, actually. I had to go to a solicitor's to get rid of one on Twitter.
And obviously, we can't name him.
You can name him. No problem naming this man. It's public knowledge. It's there in the papers. Would you like his name? Not a problem. Really. It's the most distasteful thing you can imagine. No need to name him. He's in jail for grooming on Twitter.
So it sounds like you attract some controversy as well, being out there. You said earlier, and this is my last question of the show, that you don't like publicity.
I don't like going around looking for attention when I am by nature a creature that gains it all the time, brings it off my trouble to publicize my shows and get audiences to come. And what I'm doing is a paradigm that's being invented as you go along. It's stuff that's never existed before, a positive take on being neurodivergent as an identity, as opposed to disorder and disability, boo-hoo me, I've had a terrible time. I could do the pity porn if you want. I'd have you crying your eyes out about what a terrible life I've had and failed at things and boo. But I'm trying to be a very positive man, you see. And it's as simple as that. It's kind of, oh dear, I would like a professional to work with who can and put me in the papers, put me online and say, come and see the show. And then put people at gunpoint. And maybe threatened to like bomb large areas of the country.
And go see his show. So you're there at the Edinburgh Fringe next year. You're welcome to come back on Autistic Voices near the time if it's still going. And
Thank you. Sure, it will be. You're doing a good thing.
Thank you. Well, like you, it depends on whether people listen to the show.
Yeah.
So if people are listening out there, hope you've enjoyed hearing about Paul Wadey and all of his amazing stuff that he's doing and his t-shirts and his badges and even his fridge magnets.
They're all on eBay.
And they're all on eBay.
Dharma Lover on eBay.
So that's Dharma Lover on eBay. So if have a look at his merch and see if you want to buy anything. So
there's a black market of secondhand copies of my book on Amazon. God's sake, you know, I'm not getting any money off it. People are selling them and buying them. It's the most surreal thing I've ever seen.
Oh, funny. You could make a show about that, couldn't you?
Good.
You could. Okay. Well, listen, it's been lovely speaking to you, Paul.
I wish you
all the best. It's been an absolute joy. And yes. I shall wish you well for the rest of the evening. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.
Thank you.